Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Initech.
No, you're working at Initech because that question is bullshit to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Well, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do
if I had $1 million.
Well, and welcome back to Jack's Stack Jack. I'm Tom Howie. Andrew on the board. S&P futures up 17. NASDAQ futures up 54. The CPI numbers coming out today, which probably will not include the gas and energy jump of the last couple of weeks. In fact, I'm pretty sure they won't, because probably was 3 weeks ago, maybe they put those numbers together. So still will be somewhat of an illuminating number, especially since the PPI came in so hot last week. But we will wait and see. That comes out at 7:30, so we'll be able to talk about that with a couple of our professors. And we'll go through it. We have Professor Kevin.
Excuse me, yes, and you got me coughing.
Well, that's okay.
You got me mid-cough. How you doing?
Well, good, because we're kind of recovering from the weather here last night. Took a while to get in.
What you mean, we?
Well, yeah, what do you got? Who's we? You got a mouse in your pocket?
Yeah.
Well,
it was a lovely day yesterday in Phoenix.
Well, there you go. That's why you're supposed to get down there, to the Valley of the Sun.
That's why I'm here, yeah.
But then
it's hot as hell on Sunday, but Monday and Tuesday were great.
Well, there you go. We had last night, most of the TVs were, when the dish wasn't out, I was up at the local emporium and talking to a couple of my guys, and the good news is you got to watch Michelle Scott all night, but two stations had nothing but weather. This thing, one of the guys, he was going nuts. He was there was all this stuff going on down by Kankakee that eventually spawned, I guess, four tornadoes or something. But the dude he was talking about, man, look at this, like, hook back cell. I haven't seen one of these like since college, and it's unbelievable. I'm like, okay then, there you go. It was like, you know, some guy's been digging around archaeologically for a while and finds a jaw fragment of a dinosaur or something. I think I sounded like him, but he was all giddy about it. But
he was way happier to see it than you were, wasn't he?
Oh yeah. Well, let's put it this way: last night you didn't want to be anywhere near Kankakee or Plainfield or any of those areas, but there was so much rain, and it was, you know, pretty good hailstorm even downtown last night, which is pretty unusual. But I guess they had a bunch of hail all over the place, but maybe not enough to bash cars and roast. But that's awful when that happens. I mean, some areas of the country, there's, you know, they have hail stuff where cars get wrecked like all the time. And you can buy, if you look around for cars or trucks, you can always find, like, you know, hail damaged vehicle or something. Because I think they, even though there's nothing really wrong with the car or truck, I think they still need a salvage title if the insurance company buys it, right? I'm not so sure how that works, but it'll be nothing, I'll say, wrong with the car. They got a little looks like somebody whacked the top of it with a ball peen hammer, but other than that, I think it still has a salvage title. But I'm not. That's a whole game that I wonder. I'd love to know more about. Not enough today. I'm not going to stop doing what I normally do, but one of my buddies was just in an accident with some gorgeous car. He's got some, you know, BMW, probably a $90,000 BMW. It's probably 3 years old or something. I don't know what the story is with it, but he bashed the front end in pretty bad, so they're going to, kind of total it, and they're going to give him a check for like 41 or 46 grand. Now, I wonder, they're not just dumping that in a junkyard, Kevin, because those used parts of the rest of that car got to be worth. And if you want the back seat, what are they going to want? $1,000 from you? If you want the gas tank out of the back, it's not going to be free. I mean, this got to be an amazing industry. I think you ever met like a poor scrap dealer? I don't think there are any, are there?
No, but I would imagine, yeah, I'm with you. It's probably both an amazing industry, but a real interesting industry. And, you know, it's rife with a lot of fraud, I'm sure. But on the legit side, you know, run it because there's also a lot of legitimate businesses involved in that. And in those cases, I would imagine it's pretty darn interesting biz.
Well, my buddy that I used to talk to up at the Tripoli, unfortunately, suddenly passed a couple of weeks ago. Dude had like four or five of these recycling facilities. And he was, he's a nice guy, but he also was my source into that whole industry and the stuff that they can use for what you can reuse, what you can't, what you get out of computers, who does what, how much of it's copper. You actually get gold out of computers too. You know, recycled stuff and you know what it takes to get the dirty copper out, the dirty gold, and then you got to send it to people who know how to extract it. And it's an amazing operation when you see. It used to be one by me that they shut down, of course, because it was, you know, too dirty or whatever. And you'd see all this crap going, these cars lined up with washing machines, and then you see a guy pull up with a big truck with maybe 20 crushed cars on it. You ever see one of those?
No.
They just, you know, the tires and everything are off, and the car is just crushed. And they're all stacked up on like a big flatbed. They're stacked like eight high, all tied down, and they bring those over there, and they crush those things. And then when they leave, I mean, I don't know what happens to the garbage part, but when they leave, this big, huge flatbed truck, you know, open-topped, like a huge dump truck, for lack of a better term, and all these nuggets and pieces of things are all the metal. And they had those off to a facility, and they make, you know, new girders for highways and everything with it. I mean, it's
steel recycling is big business.
Yeah, I mean, but you know, you're separating it and the whole thing. But here's the weird part. Here's how cities work. You know, all the yups in my neighborhood, of course, were outraged at this thing. Would actually, you know, there was some pollution coming out of there, and once in a while, I think it'd be a little explosion or something. You know, so everybody got a huge hair up their behind to get rid of this place. So they kept finding them. Finally, they're going to shut it down. It's called General Iron. And, you know, in the morning you'd go and there's, you know, 50 pickup trucks lined up with all the guys doing the scrap stuff in the alleys. And then they shut the place down and level everything. Okay, of course, nothing's going to be built there. We're good at leveling stuff. So the city, I think that was Rahm or might have been Rahm or what, maybe, I think it was Lori. I said, okay, you guys can... We'll let you move down to the east side here and, you know, and put this facility in here. So they put all the power in and they do all that stuff. And these guys put this facility on. Of course, the people in that neighborhood, even though they weren't even close to the place, I don't think, all of a sudden, wait a minute, you can't move stuff in our neighborhood. What's the matter with us? You know, we don't want that. Everybody's for recycling. Everybody's for everything, but nobody wants anywhere near them, right? So it's kind of a weird... That's why we send our stuff to China, right? I mean, it's... Duh. Because, okay, we don't care if those Chinese people pollute or Mexican people pollute. As long as they don't do it here. Oh, by the way, where's the jobs? Well, okay. No, did anybody think anything through, Kevin? But anyway, so this guy tells me, these guys put this plant together on the east side. Then all of a sudden, because of the people demonstrating in front of the place, the city denies them the permit. After telling them that's where they can go. The guy tells me the thing costs millions of dollars. He goes, it is without a doubt the cleanest recycling facility that's ever been designed by anybody that he's ever seen, and now they won't let him open it. So there.
Well, so first of all, I tend to very much doubt that it was an organic protest that cropped up. So somebody has an interest, and whether the interest is part of somebody's anti-pollution agenda and misguided or genuine, you know, possibly genuine and misguided, possibly, or whether it is somebody's agenda to maintain the status quo in the neighborhood. You don't want all those jobs because your political power is based on grievance, or you name it, any number of other factors that come into play. But you know that's how this stuff happens.
I don't think so. Because maybe, but I sort of doubt it. The thing had been in the news in my neighborhood for years. Anybody, if you read the Sun Times, the Trip, wherever it was, that this place was an old polluting place, and now the neighborhood has all these people living there, and there were people going around like the 7-Eleven by my house, which is, you know, a mile away. They're doing, somebody's doing a white glove test on the windowsill. They're doing a test there and saying some of the stuff came from that facility, which it probably did. So it was amazingly beat up on by everybody, to the point where if it came anywhere near your place, you'd say, why me? Why am I second-class citizen? You just drove it out of this neighborhood and you're putting it in mine. I don't know that it necessarily needed much more than that after years and years of how bad the place was.
Tom, I get that, but there's a protest that says shut it down, and there's another version of the protest that says let's ensure that it is as clean as can possibly be, which you said, it was probably the redesigned version of it was likely the cleanest in the world, or world class anti-pollution measures, however you want to do it. You know, that's a whole different flavor of protest to say we insist that you operate it in the interest of in environmental interest, in the interest of the local neighborhood, as well as while you're providing work for people. That's a whole different type of protest than just no, no, no.
Well, I mean, it also comes down to, you obviously are in the same world I am. Nobody believes anybody because nobody's believable. I mean, you can say, for instance, the huge refinery in Whiting, all kinds of rules, regulations, blah, 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 and yet every year or two, there's some crap that something got in the lake that wasn't supposed to get a little bit of fine. Well, if somebody says we're going to build a new refinery in Coloma, Michigan, nobody's going to believe anything of any one of these people that the place is going to be clean. I mean, that just our girlfriend Sarah Palin said to something effect that whenever she worked with the big oil companies, she couldn't believe how she couldn't believe any of them. Whenever they said something was going to be clean, it wasn't. I mean, there's just this general view of people that you can't believe any corporation out there. And you know what? There's some truth to that, Kevin. I mean, unfortunately.
Yeah, I think there's some legitimacy to it, Tom, but I also think that you are finding a number of corporations, not all, and you're absolutely right that there are some that I wouldn't believe them any farther than fill in the blank.
Yep.
Whatever we want to do. On the other hand, there is a lot of self-interest in doing it well and doing it right, and a lot of profitability available to do that. I talk about this this kind of thing all the time as a classroom approach. Is, you know, some very often you can do things because it's the right thing to do, but it turns out that the right thing to do is often the smart thing to do, the most profitable or the profitable thing to do. And there are a lot of businesses out there that really understand that.
Well, I guess we're not really arguing. We're talking about different flips of the same coin. But let's put it this way: the people in my neighborhood, I don't own the place, in the Lincoln Park area, which is a bunch of rich white people. It's some rich black people, but by the way, I'm a renter, not a huge landowner. But the if they would have said, we're shutting it down for 3 months and we're going to upgrade it to the cleanest thing you've ever seen, and when it opens up again, don't worry about it, nobody would have believed it, Kevin. Even if it could have been 100% true, the people in my neighborhood would never have believed it. I don't care. Get it the bleep out of here. And so the people on the south side, they're sitting there going, if that's the way those people feel, that's the way we feel. I mean, it's wrong. I get you. But it is. I mean, I don't know what I can say. There's no way they could have shut that down for a year and walked by and see people eating off the sidewalk, and they still wouldn't have believed them. So it just carries.
Well, I get it, Tom, but and I go back to the protests. Is protests nowadays seldom organic? They're typically they're organized somewhere. People are brought in. People get paid to protest. There's a whole dynamic there too that you have to consider.
Well, I'll tell you what, some of these old dudes in the bar I hang out with, they showed up for the two No Kings protest. They never got paid. They just went. So you're telling me that nobody goes unless some Soros pays them? That's not true.
nobody would be an extreme interpretation of what I said.
Okay, but I'm saying, you know, I don't know who was in the line over there as to how they got organized and did people send letters out saying, we don't want this in my neighborhood, and who that person would be. Yeah, there's probably somebody somewhere that says we're going to do it at 2 o'clock on a Sunday. As to who the person is, you know, I don't know. I mean, are they bankrolled by some nasty person, or is somebody doesn't want it in their neighborhood?
Well, there's a lot of literature out on the, you know, or a lot of video available, if you care to look, about a lot of the Minneapolis protests, where, you know, you have people showing up with, first of all, busloads of protesters, but in addition to that, handing out all, you know, the signs are all pre-printed, food for everybody is available. That doesn't sound real organic to me. That doesn't sound like a bunch of people just showed up to protest
so
one day.
It's always some... Who's the person that does it?
Tom, you go right to the absolute. I didn't say always.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I just... I'm saying people pick on this. I mean, a couple of the guys I hang with were... they're older now, but they used to be head of the Ranch Triangle, which is an area where we are, and it's a... I don't know, what do you call these things, Kevin, where they're like little community groups that they don't really have any power, but I guess they sort of do because they meet, and if there's a zoning change coming, they'll hear about it and they'll, you know, they might protest it. And for good reasons. I mean, I don't know what a 4+1 is?
Go ahead, tell us.
Well, in some of the most beautiful streets in Chicago, you know, up on the north side where the my area, I'll use the term, it's crappy housing stock. Well, the lots are all 25 feet, and no matter what you do to the place, I mean, it's a narrow place. You know, I mean, you can spend $1 million and make it nice, but the housing stock is not what you'd call terrific. Now, when you move further north in the city, some of the lots become 30, 35, maybe even 40 in some streets. And some of these streets are, the houses are just gorgeous. I mean, if you get up between, say, Fullerton and Belmont, and you go east of or west of Clark Street, the streets have nothing but beautiful homes on them. Well, of course, there's only one family that lives there, right? Well, that's not enough for some people. So I think if you could buy two or three of these homes and got maybe, I'm going to say, Kevin, 160 feet, 200 feet, they built these absolutely stone-cold ugly condominiums called a 4+1, or they were apartment buildings, where there are four stories, plus like the downstairs is like the parking spot. They are butt ugly. And they jammed a bunch of people in the neighborhood, and somehow or another, this got through zoning or whatever. Well, these little committees, like the Ranch Triangle, somebody might want to put up an 8-flat where there used to be two houses, and they're going to go, the alderman, nah, we don't want that. Because the alderman in Chicago has pretty much total control over the zoning in the ward, which is kind of screwed up, But the fact is, they're going to walk up in front of the guy, just like we always talk on the show about lobbyists. If the alderman is getting greased or nobody complains about it, they might approve something where you got 50 people living next door to you with no more parking places or anything. So these little groups kind of get together and they say, we see this coming, and we're going to show up in the alderman's office and say, we don't want it. So it's on the one hand, it's exactly the kind of participation you and I are sort of talking about. But anyway, the people that are on there go, we get people on these committees, if we say we're going to fix the park, they're against it. No matter what it is, we're against it. There's just people that'll be, so you're going to get some of that. And those guys, you're right, would be absolutely ripe for anybody to give them a free lunch and they'll go protest, right? Because they just want to protest no matter what. But, people are weird. You know that. I mean, but I think in some regard, it is... I'll say democracy at work, I mean, to a certain extent, because the developer is always going to show up in the alderman's office saying what a great deal it is. There almost has to be somebody that says, hey, wait a minute, that deal sucks. We see that at the state level. We see it at the national level. I mean, why do these big corporations get all this, you know, what are we going to call it, influence? Because they pay for it and they're always there. But the other side is supposed to be saying, wait a minute, there needs to be another side. And I think sometimes there sort of isn't. Look at the abuse. You remember when Bill Gates was still in charge of Microsoft, right? And all of a sudden they were about to get spanked by the government. I don't know, was it an antitrust case? We were just starting to do the show, Kevin. And the amazing criticism of Microsoft was not that they were a monopolist and were doing bad crap. It was that Bill Gates had stayed above the fray, and he did not engage in the political lobbyist system like the big firms, bigger firms did, and how that made him a horrible manager, really, because he needed to up his game and start paying these people off so this kind of stuff didn't happen to him. And you and I talked about it at the time, years ago. We're sitting there going, wait a minute. The criticism is not that the guy's a monopolist. It's the criticism is he's not paying people off enough to where his company is.
He's not good at the game.
And, yeah.
He was interested at the time. He was more interested in the technology. And you know, if you've ever gotten a load of his personality anyway, it's not all that good, not all that charming. I get it. And now he is totally, the game.
He is the game. He's been totally compromised to God knows what, right? Well, I mean I believe it happened to Obama. I think when he got there, after a couple of years, he just was, man, this is the game. I'm going to sit back and play basketball and do some stuff and just kind of let it roll. I mean, I think it's really hard not to.
He was the game back in his community organizing.
Well, he could have been. But I'm saying it. I don't know that he was as Dr. J said. He's done more for rich people than any Republican ever has. You know, I mean, I think it's hard to not be. You see the difference between the freshman representatives and the guys that have been there forever. And it gets every time it's a little worse. I mean, you look at what happened yesterday, and you know, you look at, you know, I'm going to say there's not a whole lot of administrations that are anxious to investigate themselves, right? I mean, it's because when you get to a certain point, you certainly believe you're above the law, and in most cases, you are. I mean, this little episode yesterday with the Secretary of Transportation came out and said we escorted a ship through the Strait of Hormuz, and all of a sudden there's a big rally in oil, and then they can't. First, he took it off the website, and then everybody said, "No, we didn't really do that." Kevin, there should be five people investigating every unusual trade in oil, and any of the stuff in ETF for oil, any of the oil companies. And you know what? If anybody's found guilty of that from that guy's office or anywhere around him, that's worse than any case I've ever seen prosecuted ever. And yet, I don't think anybody gives a shit to you. Certainly not. And everybody who's a supporter of the group or anybody who isn't a supporter is going, it's just the way it goes. No, that's the way it goes, and that's the way it's going, right? I mean, and I don't know how you pull one up tomorrow and say, well, we're going to investigate this guy. How do you even do that? I mean, that's incredible that something like that could happen. And if maybe nobody traded on it, but I'm not that naive. Why do it if nobody's going to trade on it? I mean, the amount of craziness I've seen in the market here in the last 3 days, we're talking 700 point movements in the Nasdaq, with the part where if somebody says the war is going to be over in 3 days, and the next day, oh no, we're just starting out. I mean, this is nuts. And if I guess if these guys never even heard of a trade, never even heard of the market, I guess I'll feel differently. But nobody's like that anymore. This is amazing stuff that's going on. And you know, for us, it's actually been pretty good. So, as we have our positions, everybody's always got a backstop. So if you do, you can actually make these trades. Otherwise, you can't. But I mean, we're talking about 700 points in the. For God's sake, Kevin, how much is that in a one lot? 10 grand? I mean, that's a big number. I mean, these oil contracts are huge. You know, and you sit. I don't know. You know, I don't. The news seems so disjointed to me, but clearly, if you're the one who's putting it out there, well, you got an advantage. If you decide to take it, you know, I don't know, and then somebody's going to say, well, what about Pelosi? Pelosi had no more ability to do this than the woman in the moon. I mean, she might have taken advantage of stuff over a 2 or 3 year period because she saw, and she probably did, to, you know, the companies that were being favored going forward. But that's the same as saying we're gonna buy more missiles, let's buy Boeing. Okay, that's not the same as swinging a 700 point rally that afternoon. It's not even on the same page. But it's just great.
No, but the people in Congress who are trading on information or trading on legislation that's that isn't front and center for the, everybody else. And you know what? The front and center issue is kind of interesting because I will totally cop to being I've sort of checked out of the news all week. I'm traveling, visiting my son and daughter-in-law.
Good for you.
Been out to spring training, all of that kind of stuff. And I think there's a lot of people that live like that. So how does stuff stay off the radar? That's how it stays off the radar.
I would say that I've had three people, you know, write to me to listen to the show and say, you know, they're still listening, they love it, but on a day-to-day basis, they've checked out for a week. They just can't handle it. Too much crap coming from too many different directions. And maybe there's a design to that. I don't know. On both sides. I mean, I don't.
Well, or at least, you know, the ability to count on it.
Well, you know what's interesting, Kevin, is yesterday, I took my truck in to get an alignment, right? And I never, when I say I listen to daytime TV, I do. I listen to CNBC, Fox, and anything that has to do with my clients. I mean, I never watch, you know, the. Like The View and those kinds of things. I mean, I don't even know what's on, to be honest with you. Who's the two? Are they boyfriend, girl? Is it Mike and somebody? The good-looking blonde and the guy who looks, used to be a movie star, and they do all the stuff about, you know, it's almost like the Today Show, what movies are coming out, and they had Kurt Russell on there yesterday. I hadn't seen that guy in ages. The guy's 75. He looks great. I guess those guys take care of themselves, huh? I'm looking at this guy going, you know, he looks really good. And I'm thinking, I kick my phone out, and I go, how old's Kurt Russell? The guy's like, he was born in 50 or 51 or something. I'm thinking, boy, that dude looks pretty good. Anyway, I guess we should have been a movie star, Kevin. We'd be 90 still looking good, but of course, if we're a movie star.
What do you mean, we? I'm still looking good, man.
I don't think you've had anywhere near the work done that this guy's had done.
Yeah, you know, it's just, you know, I can turn on the camera, we can zoom it, everybody can, you know, we can get people connected, they can all look and say, man, that guy is hot stuff.
Are you going to have a cardboard cutout?
And I say this all very, very tongue-in-cheek, because, man, most days I just feel like an old man.
Well, you know, we could always use a cardboard cutout of, like, 15 years ago.
Oh, we should do that. Well, actually, you know, I do weigh a lot less than I did 15 years ago. As I've been telling people, due to health issues of the last year, I'm back to high school weight, but most definitely not in high school proportions.
Oh God! Remember when it's going back a ways? Mike Royko was, you know, spectacular. I don't think Mike Royko gets a job there, do you? Nobody wants him. Nobody wants somebody like that, right?
Oh, he'd be doing podcasts. Yeah, he'd be doing podcast and Substack journalism. He'd still get an audience.
But he,
because he was good.
We wrote every day. But, you know, this guy did write every day. I mean, he wrote every day, and he had this picture of when he kind of broke in. He had the glasses on and the dark hair, and, you know, the guy looked,
I remember.
He looked pretty damn good. All of a sudden, people started ragging on him. Hey, when are you going to get a recent picture? All of a sudden, he pops in a recent picture, and you got the hairline's like 3 inches back. It's all gray. Everybody's like, who's that guy? I mean, nobody even... I guess people felt he didn't age or whatever, but I was like, who the hell's that guy? Anyway, but the...
But you know what, guy? You bring up Royko. The brilliance of Royko is he wrote not just for, but in the language of people from the neighborhood.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, he just had an incredible knack of reaching people. So, yeah, you did have because of him, you had a more informed public in Chicago, because people wanted to read his stuff every day, and it wasn't always about politics. It could be about baseball. It could be about all kinds of things, but he had his style, and it reached everybody. And if you weren't someone from the neighborhood, you were still from the North Shore, he was entertaining for you, too.
Oh, yeah. Well, plus he played softball, and he grew up on Milwaukee Avenue in a Polish neighborhood, and he knew all these people. And the thing that set, I don't know, Andy and Mayberry thing, that set all those people apart, that whole generation, and everybody on the show here, I think, and surely Wayne and Andrew talk about how hard it is, and nobody is really that good of a reporter now. You know, one day we had Cheryl Atkinson on it, and I said, how come the people at the, even the people that are grilling the Fed chair at these things, he won't answer a question, and the next person doesn't hone in on the same question. No, that was really interesting. Like, why don't you answer it? And she says, and this is funny because I never met the lady except her being out a couple times. I mean, obviously she's really sharp. And she goes, Tom, they're not you. And I go, what do you mean? She goes, they're somebody with a journalism degree. They don't know anything about money supply. They don't know anything about the questions they're asking. They're there because they don't know. They don't let anybody in that wants to ask the question. They're afraid of them. So if you ask the wrong question, you're never invited back. I mean, I guess I sort of suspected that, Kevin. I never had anybody of that magnitude say they don't know anything. but the Mike Royko gang, if you want to be a reporter, I mean, it was my equivalent of the trading floor. You came down, you interviewed, and you said, I'll be a runner. And if you showed up every day, you were a runner. The minute you didn't show up, they, you know, bleep canned you. But if you wanted to be a reporter, whether you went to school for it or not, you could get hired at the city desk, right? Pretty much. I mean, if you had any kind of stuff, they would say, what the hell is a city desk? Well, there used to be four newspapers. And Kevin, were the UPS and AP, they were involved too, weren't they? But they essentially had a group of people at night, maybe during the day too, for any kind of story, if it was a police report, if it was an accident or something, they would send people out to cover the story. Could be 2 a.m, hey, there's a murder in Inglewood, who wants to go? And somebody dashes down or that kind of thing. And that's how you wrote that and you put it out for the papers, and any paper could take it the next day. And didn't it say on the front of the thing, didn't it say from the city desk? So and anybody had access to the article, but I think your name was on it. And that's how you became. All of a sudden, there's an article, three articles in a row from Kevin O'Neill covering murders 3 nights in a row. Somebody goes, who the hell is this Kevin O'Neill? He knows how to write. And maybe one of the newspapers would grab you. But that's how all those guys started, right? And they really had a bitterness, I mean, Royko sure did, for people who didn't start that way, who just showed up at the Daily News or the Tribune because they knew somebody got a job as a reporter. He's like, who the hell is this guy? Or her? What does she know about the city? She couldn't even find Inglewood, that kind of thing, or he. So, I mean, there was always a bitterness in the guy and the people who didn't come up the way he did, wouldn't you say?
But he was not. So I think it's two-pronged. I think one of them is absolutely what Cheryl said when she was on, because I was on with you when we did that article, and you know, we got to get her back.
Oh, God, she's terrific.
And still, you know, still doing her own weekly program and still doing a lot of writing. And you can subscribe to her, you know, it's and I do. So I think it is part subject matter expertise, but there is also the other side of it. There's the access side of it. And if you're going to ask those questions, you're going to ask the follow-ups, and you're going to challenge people. And you don't have, you know, I don't necessarily mean challenge in a confrontational way, but you're just going to force thinking. And I'll give you an example in a second. If you do that, you get cut off. You don't get access. And if you don't get access, then you don't get the articles. If you don't get the articles, you ain't working. You're not working. And my example would be my side hustle that I had for several years covering Notre Dame basketball. And so I was around. I don't think it was nearly the same with Mike Bray as it was with some of the other football coaches. You know, the Charlie Weisses and even into
Brian
Kelly.
I don't think you'd have liked Charlie Weiss too much.
You know, actually, I met him a few times. If he was around his wife, he was very charming. If he was not, he was a jerk. So she had a tempering effect on him. Bob Golden was on the board for their charity, their charitable activities that they had, Hannah's House. So at any rate, that side issue. But if you are in a college town and you're covering sports, you pretty much better make sure that you have access to the head football coach, the head basketball coach, and you want to get the interviews, you want them to call on you in the press conferences, all of those things. Because if you don't, then you get shut out. Your alternative is you're covering high school sports.
Yeah.
You can go from covering Notre Dame sports to high school sport, you know, which is like covering pro sports, and you can go from there to being a beat reporter for the local high schools, and it is it can be sudden. So, you know, you're not going to ask those questions. One of the things that I learned also is that there's a way to ask questions that aren't necessarily confrontational, but that are challenging. And, you know, that coaches do love to talk about, they love to talk shop. They love to talk about their profession. It's like you when you get going on here talking about, you know, some of the technicalities of trading and of doing options and insurance and all those kinds of things that you like to talk about. Once you get going, you love it. You know, it's what you do. It's what
you
enjoy.
It's your life's work. Yeah, it's what you do for people. So
yeah, it's what you do for people. So, you know, that becomes part of it as well. And one of the things that I learned is, and I still have, you know, people that I run into that were, you know, they were their full-time job was reporter for Notre Dame sports, still is for Notre Dame sports, and I still have, you know, like a Tim Priester who says, yeah, you always ask the best questions. I don't know how you did. What you do is say everybody wants to know why a team that needs a center isn't playing their young center. Let's just give a stupid example. And so if
he's like a quarterback that was doing the coach's wife.
Well, yeah, I don't. That's a whole different conversation. But I'm just talking about a really, really simple example. If I'm the one in there that's saying, "Why in the hell don't you put Joe Schmatz into the game? You really need him," or I leave out the "why in the hell" and I just ask directly, I'm not going to get an answer. I'm not going to get anything resembling. You know, I'm just going to get some gibberish about, you know, how, yeah, he's working really hard at it.
Yeah, he's
coming along, and we'll have to find ways to get him in. No, but if I turn around and ask the same question and I say, Mike, would you talk a little bit for a few, you know, give us a little background about how a young guy works his way into the rotation when he's playing for you and what kinds of things happen, then I'm going to get a really good answer, because now we're talking about how he goes about coaching and running his program, and it's a generic question about anybody, and then you can turn around and say, okay, now I see that, how that would apply, how he would apply that to Joe Schmatz.
What if he says, I woke up last Saturday and all of a sudden my grass was cut and everything was trimmed and the kid did it?
Yeah. But, you know, those were the kinds of things that you wanted to do, and I don't think that there are, so we can go back to subject matter expertise, but all of these sports writers that were sitting in the post-game press conference at Notre Dame have enough subject matter expertise to ask good questions. They just aren't very good at asking questions. So it's two-pronged. So what I'm saying is there's a lot of people that are trained to ask the questions, but they don't know, they don't have the expertise to follow up and really pull the answer out of the person they're interviewing. There are other people who don't even know how to ask the damn questions in the first place.
You know, that's true. The only, you and I, though, if we were doing this years ago, we might go like Cal and say, gee, during the class day, I saw Chuck Muncy living at his house on the beach and was on the beach all day. How does he go to class from the beach? That wouldn't get you back in, would it?
No, see, that's the kind of thing that now you pissed off the coach and you're just not, and then you're going to call and try and ask for an interview, a sit-down interview. You ain't getting it. And when you're not getting it, then, well, you can get the sit-down interview with the high school football coach.
Yeah.
It'll be real interesting.
Hey, you know, we've been talking a little bit around, I guess, everything's political, I suppose, but like I was saying yesterday, I was stuck in front of daytime TV. The amount of political commercials, because there's all these pretty hot primary races here. A lot of them are because, you know, Durbin's not running again, the senator from Illinois. And there's all these other races, right? I don't even know who all these people are. But I talked the other day, Kevin, I don't know if hopefully you're in Arizona and not listening, but about how people do focus groups now, and they try and find out what people...
By the way, I've got them downloaded for the plane ride, so...
Well,
Because we start at 4 a.m. here, so...
You guys are on... you're 2 hours different now.
We're 3 hours different now.
Well, two for me.
We're on Cal. Oh yeah, 2 hours for you.
Because you guys don't. You're in Mountain Time, but you don't do daylight savings, right?
Correct. So, we are on California time now, not Denver time.
So, but these are all Democrats running against each other, and actually, well, there's a couple of Republicans on there, but those races aren't you know, the Republican race to run against who's ever going to win the Durbin spot is anyway. But I can, by having done a bunch of these, when Dr. J and I used to go love and do these things to get $100 and go to dinner back when we were just starting out. And Robin used to get us all these places. One lady of hers, they loved having us because we had some personality. But anyway, clearly the focus groups have set forth, every one of these people that's running on the Democratic side has four talking points, every single ad. Now, I don't know how the rest of the world is listening to eight of them in a row, picking out those 4 points like I can. I'm not saying other people can't, but the first one is, You fought for whatever you did, even if you were the dog catcher. You fought for something.
You fight, man. You gotta fight.
You got, because clearly the feedback is from people in Congress everywhere. They don't seem to be doing anything. Maybe, you know, Trump's running right over him, or whoever it was. Biden didn't pay any attention to him. The reflection from people in Congress is they're not pushing hard enough. Whatever side you're on, and I don't think that's just a Democratic view of people in Congress. I think it might be a general view. So whatever it is, even if the person was a school board person, he was fighting for something. The second thing is, ICE must be incredibly unpopular among people, just by the way, whether or not you think, you know, that we got to get people that aren't citizens. Whatever your thoughts are, the methods, a lot of people clearly the focus groups are saying the methods aren't what people want. A lot of people don't like Trump. Okay, they don't like his personality or stuff, even if you think some of the stuff he's doing is good. And by the way, he's not all bad in all out of stuff, and he sees stuff that other people don't see. So I'm not, even though I never liked the man personally, doesn't mean that everything he does is wrong. But the fourth one was something else. It was, your medical expenses. So those are the four talking points that obviously are pouring out of every focus group coming from anywhere on the Democratic side. The interesting part here, Kevin, is once the primaries are over and they actually start going against the Republican, what will the talking points be different? Because they will be different. Because now you're going against, you know, you're like out of the, you know, out of the conference, you're into the big playoffs now. It'd be interesting to see what they change to, or if they change. I think they will change. I just don't know what they're going to change to. I mean, the fighting part, now the Republican guy is going to say, well, I fight too. I mean, I've been fighting this and any other. So there's obviously going to be an energy level combatant here, which I don't know if I've ever seen before. Have you? I mean, because somehow or another, people have got this view that these people don't do anything. And I don't think that's on one side of the aisle. I think it's on both sides, don't you?
Well, yeah, but I think fight's been part of the political lexicon for a lot of years.
Yeah,
now.
But I think if we had a focus group together, and then if we ask questions like, you know, pick a Republican somewhere from the burbs, what has Joe done for you? Or Danny Davis from the city, what has Danny Davis done for you in the 25 years he's been there? Do you think he could have put more energy into it? And what do you think? What would you like to see in that person? And I don't guarantee it, but from listening to this, having been involved in focus groups, I pretty much think that with the feedback they're getting is these guys aren't, whatever they're supposed to do, they're not doing enough of it. I mean, that appears to be the conclusion. And whether it's right or not, I don't know. But I'm saying, obviously, that's what's percolating up. Don't you think? I never hear from the guy.
It.
You know, whether it's legitimate or not, what's the difference? John and I were at one, and they were talking about Mercedes Benzes, right? They go, what do you, if you see an attractive blonde lady in a Mercedes-Benz commercial in a red convertible, what do you think? And the guys go, she's a hooker. No way some regular lady can afford a Mercedes. So they're, and they write that down. They go, you know, don't make it seem like the owner of a Mercedes isn't somebody regular, that they're their high-class call girl. I mean, they take all these notes, right? I mean, it's scary what these people write down. And people will give you, you know, they got their $100, and who was on the show yesterday was arguing with me that people won't, they'll never tell you what they really feel. Yeah, they do. You're giving them $200 to ask them, they'll tell you. It's amazing what people will say when there's, no, there's not like their boss is sitting next to them or their wife. But anyway, it's kind of fun to watch, Kevin.
It's also, you know, what will you say for public consumption? What will you say in private? And a focus group is much more private in that nothing's leaving, you know. You've got a bunch of strangers. It's not like somebody's going to go out and say, Tom Howell said, and you say...
Well, nobody knows your name. Nobody has a name.
Nobody knows your name. So so you are a little liberated in that respect.
Liberated, that's a good word. Hey, what's the story on this guy that the biggest trade of the year, and they rejected him physically? The guy that went to the Ravens?
Oh, yeah. The guy that Bears Nation really wanted, Crosby, yeah. Well, he's recovering from some kind of surgery. And so when they bounced him on the physical exam, what they're really saying is that his recovery is not going well. Now, that could mean behind schedule, not well, and he'll be fine eventually. But Crosby, you know, I think he's running up in the 30 years old, plus or minus, you know, type of age. So he's an outstanding football player. We saw him, you know, when the Bears played Las Vegas. Yeah. He'll wreck the other team. But, you know, Las Vegas is trying to rebuild, and they're trying to accumulate draft picks. Well, if they still want to trade him, the price just changed, didn't it?
Well, I mean, the same thing happened with the Sweat, Montez Sweat. When he showed up with the Bears, he had a back problem the year before, right? And of course, he played half a training camp. I mean, he missed many days of training camp, and he didn't play any of the exhibitions that year. And I'm going to say he has been a good ball player, but he's nowhere near what was advertised.
Yeah, I don't remember him being injured when he arrived.
Who was the guy? It was a defensive lineman. It came with a big, big thing, and it wasn't like he had, you know, had back surgery or anything, but there was this nagging. I think it was him because he's their biggest sign in the last few years, and
they traded for him. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
He wasn't a signing.
Well, whatever. And the guy, I mean, it looked to me like there was some chance of the dude like playing one game and never playing any again. And for that kind of money, I mean, it's not like these guys have to spend the money, right? So it's not like, well, if you
there's a minimum they have to spend. Yeah, there's a minimum cap of money that they have to spend.
Well, my whole view of this changed dramatically on one day, Kevin, and I've mentioned this to you before, but listeners maybe haven't heard. When the Browns left for Baltimore, how many years ago was that? Like a long time ago.
30?
Yeah.
30?
Yeah. Well, the last game in... was Art Modell, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so he's going to Baltimore. So for some reason, they had... The last game is there, and I'm watching it. I was watching it because the coach, Ditko, was the color man. I mean, it's not normally what he did, but... And I don't know. Was it Chip Carey? Anyway, somebody's doing the play-by-play, it wasn't normal, and they're talking about the team leaving. And Ditka, maybe he's never been asked back, says, well, you know, the question was, how, you know, the guy wasn't making money in Cleveland. So Ditka pops out, and he says, well, you know, the check from, now this has probably changed a little bit, maybe not that much, the check from NFL for essentially the TV rights was like exactly equal to the salary cap. He said, so you're that all your people are paid out of that check essentially. And he says, if you don't make it up to the salary cap, I don't know if they had a minimum back then, he goes, that money basically goes in your pocket. He goes, now your local radio, tickets, concessions, your piece of NFL properties, I don't know if that's still the same, but it used to be all the jerseys sold all around the country, airports and whatever. Everybody got a share of that. So it used to be like $3 million a team. This is, you know, 30 years ago. Now I'm sure it's way more than that, but that all went right into the owner's revenue pot. And out of there, you had to pay the coaches, you had to pay the insurance, you had to pay for the travel and the training camp. But he said something like, only an orangutan doesn't make money. So to say you're losing money, he goes, it's so ridiculous. He goes, unless you've got a big gambling problem, he said this on the air, or something like that, there's no way you lose money. You can't. It, ever since that day, my view of how these guys come out always crying poor mouth is wrong. I still think the check covers all the salaries, or pretty damn close, and all the other stuff, you know, is just gravy. I mean, that, isn't that the way you see it?
I think it's pretty hard not to make money with an NFL franchise.
I can't imagine.
but there's profit and there's cash flow, and you know it's pretty easy to make a positive cash flow look like it's look like a loss or a marginal gain. So, you know, it's all in the accounting. It's all in what it's handled. It's all in what's on book versus off book. You know, you look at the Cubs. Is Marquee part of the Chicago Cubs revenue stream, or is it a separate entity?
Well, I mean, the simplest one, and especially with closely held corporations, for instance, Stocks and Jacks, closely held. I'm it, right? Well, we don't make any dough. What if we had somebody said, I really like your show, like, here's $1 million for a commercial for, you know, Joe's Dog Food or something. So we run a commercial every day or two. We probably give them more than one. $1 million. At the end of the year, you know, my expenses are, you know, whatever. We, you know, we got the streaming, we got a few things, and producers. It's, you know, it's not that much. What if all of a sudden my cash flow was $800,000? And I wrote myself a check for $800,000. I said, man, it looks to me like Stocks and Jacks broke even. Okay. Well, how many McCaskies do you think are on the payroll of the Bears? More than just me. So it's like we always talk, Kevin, you and I, about if Northwestern doesn't make any money, but 40 people up top make $5 million a year, sounds like profit to me, doesn't it? But now we don't say it that way, do we? That's not profit. Well, we broke even. Right, but do we really?
Yeah, it's not accounting profit.
No, well, but it's not. What do you mean? We paid this chief guy $800,000. Well, that'd be cool, wouldn't it? I mean, okay, so but he did pretty well. Now, is it profit to him or is it salary? Oh, it's just salary. So there's no profit. I mean, really? Does Notre Dame have no profit? I mean, come on. Well, depending on, that's what I ask Larissa and Russell like every other week. If I walked in your class tomorrow and put up on the blackboard, define profit. Now, when we were young, Kevin, it was real easy to define, wasn't it? Everybody got paid what they're supposed to get paid, and the bottom line dropped to the owners, right? Well, where does that happen? First of all, some of the biggest institutions in the country now don't have an owner, do they? Or their utilities. You think utilities care about the people in stock, the stock? What you'd rather do, pay out a dividend to people you don't know or give yourself a bonus?
I'm Mr. Bonus. Call me Mr. Bonus.
Call you, yeah, Mr. Bonus. I mean, so we got to the point now, and it's, you know, we talk about it on the show from different directions. That's why we love arguing with people. We can't even define going to the bathroom anymore in this country, can we? We can't define, or people front running the market. We can't define anything because depending on your point of view or people you like and don't like, or whether somebody else did it worse. You can't even define a traffic stop now. Wait a minute, the guy before me was going 90. I'm only going 88. What are you stopping me for? We seem to have lost our feet in the ground kind of anyway. We don't know what a war is. Just a war? No, it's an incursion. What the hell's the difference? I mean, is any word that you know of now, Kevin, don't have 15 different interpretations based on your point of view?
Well, I think they all do.
Yeah.
Legal versus illegal is the big debate. Those kinds of things.
So, I mean, nobody ever says moral versus immoral. Why would you do that? Because nobody even knows what that is or cares.
No. Yeah, people. Not enough people operate on that level.
No, it's a kind of crazy stuff. So are you going to go to a game today? Are you heading back? What are you doing?
No, today is just me and my daughter on my own. My son and daughter-in-law have to work. So we are going to go over to Mesa. They have an Asian district there. Let me get a good cough out. So let me mute for a second. So we're going to go visit the Mesa Asian district.
So you took the Chicago cough. You took the Chicago cough out there. Over here's got it.
Yeah. No, it's just it's so dry here.
Oh yeah.
I have to throat. So we're going to do that, and then from there we're going to go over to the Desert Botanical Gardens.
How's the new park? I've never been to the new park. I used to go to the old one all the time, Holcomb Park Field, or whatever it was.
Oh, yeah. No, this is Sloan Park now.
Yeah. Somebody else.
It is. I'll tell you what. I went to. I saw the Cubs on Sunday, and I saw the White Sox on Monday. And the White Sox experience was much more what I expect out of spring training and what I think spring training should be. So the Cubs is interesting. First of all, it was full. They draw a much bigger crowd, as you might expect, and they have really sort of permeated the whole Wrigley experience that we know in Chicago, and they built a mini version of that. Including having a section called the rooftop section that's kind of raised up and off, and all kinds of stuff in there. So I think it's pretty cool what they've done. It's really good business, and it was very crowded and very hot, and I didn't enjoy that nearly as much as I enjoyed going to the White Sox game, hanging with my kids, and just kicking back on a nice. A nice day and enjoying this baseball game that's going on without getting too intense about it, and so on. The White Sox, what they do is they share the property with the Dodgers.
Right.
So there's this large sprawl of property, and then there's the White Sox side where all their facilities and practice fields and all that.
Yeah, they got like four or five practice fields, and the Dodgers have them on the other side. In the middle is the big.
The Dodgers have them on the other side, and they share the stadium. And the stadium's very nice. I honestly, the Monday experience, as far as I'm concerned, was better.
Well, we had. I'll say this, then we got to get to our guys. But not that you're one of our guys. Dr. J and I, we went to. The Cubs used to be at Hoholcomb Park, and it was owned by this Indian group, the Hoholcombs. Go figure, right? Every year they would jam it up the ass at the Hoholcombs. You got to do this to the place, this to the place, and finally they just left. So somebody's there. It's a beautiful facility, and right down the block is Sloan Park, where there's like five fields for the minor league people. So they're like two blocks down, and if you want some guy to come down and pinch hit in the seventh inning, they scoot him down in a golf cart. He hits, and then he goes back to the other place. So it was real convenient, but it wasn't good enough for the Cubs, right? I mean, they got to get something even better. But so Dr. J and I go to a game with the Giants. I think are still in Scottsdale, like in downtown Scottsdale. So we go to the game, and they're playing the Cubs. So it's pretty busy. The guy goes, "We don't have any seats left. Would you mind sitting on the field?" I go, "What do you mean on the field?" Well, they opened the gate. There's about 20 of us that are sitting, where the bullpen used to be at Wrigley Field. It was on the field, basically. We're sitting in the bullpen on the grass, which we should have brought a blanket, but how would you know you were sitting in the grass? We're sitting there, and balls are coming right by us. Finally, this guy walks up, "Hey, can you two dudes move over? They want me to warm up." We move over, and the guy's warming up like right over our heads in the bullpen. Can you imagine that today? Somebody let somebody sit.
And they do both places do have a grass area in the outfield.
Yeah, over the fence, not inside. We were inside.
Yeah, well, okay, that's different.
Yeah, I'm saying we were in. Remember, really, the old bullpen. We'd be like sitting on the grass in the bullpen. That's where we were. I'm like, how do they allow this? But they did. Imagine some guy coming landing on you or something. But anyway, it was fun. Well, five innings on the grass kind of gets old if you don't have a blanket, but. Anyway, but you're right. It was really Sloan or the old place. I don't know. You got me going on this, but I used to go stay. My buddies would go out there and get a Winnebago and stay in a Winnebago. So the minute I got out there, the guy who was worked with me goes, "Screw the Winnebago." He piles into my motel room, and where all the minor leaguers stayed, right away, because Mesa was nothing in Mesa. Mesa's like an old retirement community. So I'd go out in the field in the morning. It was all soccer fields.
Not true anymore, though.
No, so I go to the field, I park, and back when I was in good shape, I'd run my sprints in the outfield, or before anybody got there at 9 in the morning, and then I go have breakfast and get cleaned up and we'd go to the game. We never went in a park. Somebody pulled a Winnebago out by the right field wall, and we'd all sit on top of the Winnebago, and they never cared. We paid $1 to park, and five guys are sitting on top of the Winnebago watching the game. I mean, you're right up against the fence, so it was like an outfield seat. So 2 years later, I go out there and I pile into the place at 9 o'clock, and there's all these cars there. The guy says, "That'll be like $3. I go, "What do you mean $3? I just came here to run." I go, I was there 3 years ago. Nobody was. He goes, that's all changed, buddy. He goes, well, for old time's sake, go over there. Nobody's on that field. Go over there, do your running, and pile out. We'll see you later for the game. And the guy didn't charge me. You imagine that today? No, that field over there, you can still go run over there. Nobody's parked over there yet. I'm going, okay. Now they're there at 9 in the morning in that sun to walk out there and boil yourself. I mean, whatever. World does change, doesn't it?
Yeah. Well, you should probably get Russell on here because he's been waiting patiently. Yep. And so we'll turn it over to Russell, and I might go back to sleep.
Why don't you do that? Hey, Russell, how are you, buddy?
I'm doing okay. I weathered the storm last night.
Were you here?
I'm here.
Oh, I mean in Chicago.
Oh, no. It hit Indiana as well.
Oh, it did. Okay.
Yeah.
Did you...
I got to tell you, because we're talking about traveling for spring break, guess where your favorite college student from D.C. went to spring break?
Don't tell me Mexico.
Well, she was supposed to go to Turkey.
Okay.
And because of what broke out in that part of the world, she made the executive decision to go in the different direction. She's visiting Punch the Monkey in Tokyo.
Really?
Yeah. Do you know who Punch the Monkey is?
No, but you're about to tell me.
Oh, my goodness, Gray. I you must be the last person in America that doesn't know who Punch the Monkey is.
I'm the last person to know a lot of things.
He's a little monkey in the Tokyo Zoo that was born, and everybody rejected him, so they gave him a little stuffed animal, and he runs around with his stuffed animal, which kind of protects him and his buddy.
Oh, really? There you go.
Yeah, I don't know. He's probably got, he's a viral sensation.
Well, you have no idea how much, when I was sitting in the bar last night talking to my guys, learning about the world, how much I was thinking of you last night and your daughter.
Oh, God, that's kind of frightening.
Well, the weather here was so bad that that every station, when the dish wasn't down, when the dish came back on, every station had commandeered their entire evening thing for the weather.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It was Michelle, Scott was on one of those channels, which is always nice to look at. This other guy was on the other channel, and he reminded me so much of your daughter that was into that for a while. The guy was like, he was an adult.
No. That's the other daughter. She stayed up all night watching this stuff.
Okay, well, I'm sitting there going, there's Russell's daughter 10 years from now. This guy was, he was as close to being orgasmic on TV. There was some kind of cell in Kankakee.
Oh, I know which one you're talking about. But what was it? With my daughter about it.
What was it? Some kind of a, what do you say, a hookback cell or something? Some weird name. And he goes, I haven't seen one of these since college. This is unbelievable. The guy kept saying, here's a guy. It's like me, you and I watching some wild volatility movement in the market going, God, I haven't seen that in 40 years. This is great. He sounded just like that.
Emmy and one of the other people in the meteorology school, they basically stayed up all night monitoring this thing.
Oh, it was, well, plus,
and,
you know,
and when it got close down here, I think Larissa, and Larissa's not here today, but Larissa saw a bunch of meteorology students like prepping to go out and chase this thing last night.
Wow. But I mean,
yeah, Emmy was not one of those, but she asked me, she said that, but is Emmy out there with those people, like, you know, with all the instruments and stuff, measuring what's going on? I said, I think she's monitoring it from her dorm room, but she was all over it.
Well, when you and she went, the couple, for those that don't know, Russell, being the good dad that he is, took his daughter out to do this chasing the tour. You guys just weren't in somebody's pickup truck. You were in a van that was somewhat padded and everything else, though, weren't you? I mean,
We were with we were actually in a convoy of three vans that went all. I mean, basically drove a third of the country because we started in Denver. We drove across the northern United States over the course of a week chasing tornadoes, and we turned around at the Mississippi River between Iowa and Illinois. And then went all the way back and then flew back.
Okay, but you were not... The first time I read about people doing that, this was years ago, but they essentially, for lack of a better term, they got a Brinks truck. Padded the hell out of the inside, and their intention was to drive right into the thing. You guys weren't doing that.
Oh, no. Yes. No, we were approaching it from whatever, and, you know, of course, Emmy, who's too chicken to come on with us, she, you approach them from a certain direction. You know, if they are always going northwest to southeast, then you get behind them and you approach them from the proper direction so that you know that they're not going to come at you.
Why don't you just get in front of it and go to where a trailer park is? They go right for the trailer park.
When I heard where a couple of them hit yesterday, I was very frightened for trailer parks.
Yeah,
without saying a place.
You know, this is a dog interest story that probably nobody cares about, but one of those came right by our house, Palm Sunday, 1967, and it decimated Oaklawn High School and that whole area, and it went up in the air and came down, and it actually the last place it hit was Beverly Country Club. And it didn't hit the whole place. It just whacked the dining area. So it took like half the place down. But the weird part is, and for those that don't know Chicago geography, and why would you, Chicago is pretty flat, except for the southwest side where Beverly Country Club is at Evergreen Park, the area of Beverly Hills. Well, it's the spot where the lake used to be like two lakes ago. So it's actually the highest point in the city. So and then it drops off all the way pretty much to the lake. So when it hit Beverly Country Club and came across that top hill at Ryan's Woods, it never hit down again. It just was there visible all the way to the lake.
It ramped it up.
It just kind of went as a funnel cloud into the lake and didn't drop down in the many more miles of essentially city that it could have wrecked, but it didn't. But the weird part of it is he wasn't old at the time, he was young, this mongrel dog, right, my uncle gave us. And he had never had any problem with the weather. And this thing went by us. It probably missed us by. It wasn't down in our area. It ended up going down 2 miles north, where we eventually moved. By the way, but it went by us. You could sort of hear it. The dog freaked out. What went on? Was the barometric pressure difference or whatever?
That's exactly what it was.
And he lasted another 14 years, maybe from that date. From that day forward, every time it was a drizzle, he became a puddle and jumped in your lap shaking. ever since that day. Before that, the storm didn't bother him at all. Once he felt that, he's like, that thing's coming again. I'm scared bleepless. Most amazing, talk about, it's a weird little story, but the sense they have for those things, the look on him, he just... You think it's a barometric pressure? What do they drop? It drops like to 25 or 26 when those things go by, don't they?
Yeah, and I think that's what animals pick up on. That's when they pick up on. We refer to it as, you know, like it got it, the temperature dropped instantly when that line that creates the tornadoes occurs. But there's a lot more going on than that. And I think that's what animals pick up on. You know, they get super quiet before. Yeah, but before a storm hits, the one that always that I'd love to know why they know this, but when a tsunami's coming at an area, apparently the animals just start charging away from the beach as quickly as possible. They pick up on it somehow quicker than we do. We're also damn stupid. We just pull out our phones to take a video of it,
and we think we know everything, and we sort of don't. But so yeah. what? The market stuff, I mean, obviously we're doing that all day, and we have people who are doing stuff, and I can't emphasize, this is not trading advice, but I can't emphasize enough that if you have your position, if you're not naked one way or the other, where you're in trouble, where you're short put, short calls, or, you know, long stock on margin, or whatever it is, short stock on margin, if you're not in a position where a movement hurts you, then you can actually take advantage of the position by being protected and being able to roll up or down. The world is your oyster right now. It really is. And for everybody else, most of the time when you're paying for protection one way or the other, you know, people say all you do is piss away money. Okay, and over a long period of time, maybe you do, maybe you don't. But in times like this, the world is really your oyster, right, Russell? And normally, I would say, unless you're really good, if you protect yourself, the cost of the insurance probably is great or greater than your ability to scalp in the meantime, right? But once in a while, the ability to trade because you are protected is dramatically different. And it happens once every, maybe not even every couple of years, or seems like lately it's happening more. But in, there were a couple of years in the 2012s and stuff where we never had a 1% move in a day for what, 2 years, and now it's happening like every hour. I mean, the other night was a 700-point move in the Nasdaq from the night. I mean, if you could never, just because you had a hunch, bet a bunch, have bought five of those futures down 150 points. But if you would have had some puts on your side,
yeah,
you could have bought them, and what would you have made? 700 points? But now, the straddles now, I was looking last night, I'm looking at Microsoft, I think this one is, and these are the 11th is Friday, correct? The straddle is like $5 for Friday. I mean, for God's sake, Russell. I mean, that's, you know, or it's actually the 11th is Monday, right? No, the 11th is Friday. I mean,
yeah.
Well, that's a 1% move. And for years, what would that straddle have been? 250? 220? Something like that?
Yeah.
And now, the price to pay, the price to insurance is amazingly high. The VIX, even though it's down like 8 points in the last 2 days, is still 25, which is pretty darn high.
Yeah, and that's a significant level. I mean, that's, you know, expecting a point and a half or 1.5% move a day.
Well, yeah, and it's
which is headline grabbing, or used to be. I guess we're getting kind of used to it now.
Well, you're used to it, but you're paying, right? I mean, I'm looking at the spiders now. These guys have expirations every day, and today's the 11th. Okay, with I'm going to say tonight. What do you suppose the straddle would be tonight? I mean, I'll look and see. Straddle, by the way, I know we're getting a little too technical. They're calling a put. Well, the spider is 676, right? And it's 490 and 260 is what? 750.
1%.
750. That's over a percent for one day.
Yeah.
And we said, we went 2 years without ever making a. I'm going to guess that was maybe $1.50 back in those days. $2? $2.50.
I actually have the one-day straddle data going back. I keep it myself. And it's like 0.8%. It's kind of a norm.
Okay.
It's a 0.8% is kind of a norm. For the NASDAQ, just under 1% is kind of the norm.
Well, the difference, I think, is, in our we always have put protection for people. And again, I wouldn't want anybody to do this on their own anyway. So I'm not giving any kind of advice. But now so many stocks are expirations 3 days a week. And one thing I will say, and Russell will concur because he writes books and knows more about this than me, the difference between options decay and your auto insurance decay is your auto insurance decays linearly. Options do not. Mm-hmm. They decay with the square root of time, correct?
Yeah.
And so the idea that now we have the ability for our clients, if we've locked in the puts for, like, say, a month, we can sell calls 3 times a week and get the time decay for essentially 48 hours and not a whole week. That if you can get away with that 3-4 days in a row, it's really something. Russell, and obviously if the stuff's moving around, you don't always get away with it, but it's really something how much you can. If we ever stayed steady for a while, which, you know, is like saying whatever, if it doesn't rain for a while, but I mean, your time decay on a daily or every 2 day basis is dramatic.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, remember when it used to be once every 3 months there was an expiration? For God, now it's every other day in some of these stocks.
It's every day in
the indexes,
in a lot of markets, so.
But what are you finding? One quick question, and we're going to have to make sure we're going to have the CPI stuff. We might go to break early. What we're noticing though is, I mean, I think you know. I mean, we don't talk that much about business and stuff, but I have a lot of stocks here that people have essentially brought us the stock and want us to protect it, right?
Yeah.
Legacy stock, whatever it happens to be. Could be tax reasons, could be whatever. It's up to the client. But you're seeing massive increase in option quote volume. It's so narrowed into the the daily, the every other day, the top 50 stocks. Russell, I don't know who the hell is putting out the markets for the other stocks. Mm-hmm. The markets suck. They're wide. There's nobody trading. I mean, if somebody lands you a stock, you know, pick one out there. It could be anything, unless it's really a high price or a high traded stock. For God's sake, $2 wide, $1 wide. I mean, we're really good at putting stuff in the middle and putting spreads out there where people fill us just to get us out of the way. But boy, mm-hmm. It is. If you are actually buying the offer and selling a bid in some of these things, good luck to you. I mean, and these are stocks that used to be good traders. There's nothing mm-hmm. there. And yet you go to the Q page or something like that, and there's a gazillion options traded. So the industry can say, okay, we're trading like bandits, but in reality, individual stocks is pretty hard to do right now. I don't know if you're noticing that.
I know that I kind of keep the stock universe that I pay attention to the top 50 stocks based on option volume from the previous year. And I know that, you know, that we got to a point where about 60% of the volume in the option industry was the individual stock options was concentrated in those 50 names. That number has gone up.
Yeah.
It's just like the difference between the haves and the have-nots liquidity wise for individual stock options. I think it's become pretty apparent. And it may be just that the people that like to actively trade in the option market that were always looking around for things have so many daily opportunities now.
Yeah.
You know, maybe that's where a lot of people have talked about the daily, you know, SPX index options causing distortions to VIX, which it didn't. I know it didn't. I proved it. But they were saying, you know, that was going to skew the longer dated index option market, and it hasn't at all. And you figure it's got to impact something. Maybe that's what it impacted, is the liquidity in the individual stock options.
Well, by the way, for my clients, that's one of the reasons. We're going to sneak the break here, Russell, because we're going to be back for the CPI. For my clients, that's why I do the protected index program, because those things are mm-hmm. all liquid. I don't have to worry about picking a clunker stock, you know. But what do you do? I mean, from time to time, because of the Chicago area where we are, we've had boatloads of like UPS. Jesus Christ! That's every roll is a struggle, every single one. And if you're out of the top 50, well, let's go a real quick break because all it's going to change when the CPI comes out. S&P futures now up 1. NASDAQ futures up 8. Real quick, we'll be back in like a minute.
How would you like to save money on nearly all your prescription drugs? We've set up a special toll-free number for the RX Outreach Program. They're a nonprofit company whose mission it is to make prescription drugs more affordable to the masses. They don't take insurance, and in many cases, your prescriptions are even cheaper than your co-pays. They carry thousands of different prescription drugs, so whatever you're taking, there's a good chance they have it. No coupons are required, and this is not a discount card. It is pure savings on your prescription drugs. They specialize in generic meds for any chronic health needs you have. Call with your prescription and find out for free how little you can pay for your prescription drugs. Remember, we don't take insurance, so call right now.
800-586-9885. 800-586-9885. 800-586-9885. That's 800-586-9885.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Lone Oak Bank Stocks and Jocks. SP futures are banging around the flat line here. So we're not going to go through all this stuff here because we're going to wait for this number. February CPI, I'm seeing if I get in my... there we go. January to February, I've got unadjusted 0.5, adjusted 0.3. So it's probably going to come out 0.3 on the thingy here. And I got year over year is... where are we? February to February, 2.4, which probably is in line. But this is 2 months in a row now where the unadjusted is higher than the other. So that's I don't know, last month the unadjusted was 0.2, and the adjusted was 0.2 and the unadjusted was 0.4. Now this month it's 0.3 and 0.5, and we can go into this how much. Andrew, why don't you do a real quick, a real quick traffic weather, and then we're back to Russell.
All right, yeah, keeping it quick. Just for sports, the Bulls won over the Warriors, and the Suns won over the Bucks. For Chicago,
Bulls won. You got to say that.
I know. Yeah, literally the first time in a while been saying anything like that. But for Chicago, it's currently 38 degrees. We're gonna have a high of 40. As you can see, just looking right out the window, it's gonna be pretty rainy throughout the day, and it's only gonna get cloudier, windier, and cooler throughout the day, with a chance of snow as well as the evening comes in. Over in Phoenix, they're keeping things simple. 59 degrees with a high of 83, and plenty of sunlight. Finally, for Chicago traffic, inbound Kennedy to Montrose, gonna take you 29 minutes. Inbound Edens from Lake Cook, gonna take you 48. Inbound Eisenhower from Wolf, gonna take you 45. Inbound Dan Ryan from 95th, gonna take you 25. And the inbound Stevenson from I-294 is gonna take you 43 minutes. Back to you, Chief.
At the risk of doing this every freaking month, who does these adjustments? Right now, the energy adjustment, the unadjusted, is up 1.7 on a month, and we know in the last week it's up 20%. The unadjusted, or the adjusted, is 0.6. And I'm someday, somewhere, if there's a heaven, Russell, I'm going to look down and find out what desk it is, who the guy or lady is that makes these adjustments. The numbers come in. It seems to me they'd be pretty static, wouldn't you think? Rice is up to
you
would think. I mean, I didn't know.
But you know, the energy number, that's going to be in the March CPI, not the February.
Well, I'm saying, but last month, unadjusted was up 1.7, and they cut back that down to 0.6. Why? Because we know it's, what is it, the third week that they use? And this didn't happen until the fourth week, and really last in the first week in March, right? So, but it was up, evidently, according to this, it was up a little bit. Gasoline, get a load of this. Gasoline unadjusted is up 3.3%. Adjusted is 0.8. Well, for God's sake, if you look at the unadjusted numbers of the last 2 months, we're averaging 4.45. Okay, you multiply that times 12, where are you? You're well over 5, right? Not 2.4.
What kind That's of, where you should be.
Yeah, what kind of... Who? I'm asking you questions.
There is a very extensive document you can read through that explains the adjustment for each one of these things. You can get it from, is it the Bureau of Labor Statistics that puts it out?
I don't...
And there's a book out that a guy wrote about different government numbers, and he talks a little bit about the CPI, and he refers to, you know, some of the numbers like we are right now. And he even says, you know, if you look in, here's where the explanation is. But it's, you know, every other year they do a bunch of readjustments, and they talk about, and they change some of the seasonalities around, et cetera. So, but you can find it. It's just a chore to go find it.
Well, I remember reading one time, and I haven't been able to find it again, of course, but I don't want to read it again, probably. I somehow stumbled on the adjustments over a long period of time. And the F-150, because obviously, if the F-150 in 1985 had a stick shift, and they find out that everybody pretty much orders the automatic, so next year it's standard in the truck. I don't know if it is now or not, but say it is, and it used to be a $600, whatever option. That you have to adjust the price that's now in there. So I kind of get that part. But it also reaches, and this is what I was trying to talk, well, I was not trying to, but I was having a discussion with Larissa about last week. Someplace, somewhere, you have to do a look back, you know?
Yeah.
You know, it's sort of like, every week didn't look like I gained any weight. Like, I look at a picture of myself 20 years from now and I go, it came from somewhere, right?
Yeah, we snuck up on you.
Snuck up on. I mean, at some point, and I think I did this for like a 10-year span. According to these guys, the cost of the pickup truck had barely moved. You know, because they added the automatic transmission. They added the air conditioning. They added backup cameras. They added up sensors for this, sensors for that. And at the end of the day, the truck that used to be $20,000 that lasted you for 10 years. is now 40. I'm not saying that it doesn't have an air conditioner in it. I know that, but at some point you sit there and go, we're not really talking about the same. A truck's a truck. You know, I mean, you plunk it on your farm or your construction group and you drive the damn thing for 20 years. I mean, you reach the point here where you go, but just in terms of, I use a term my mother used to use, brainwashing. You don't even hear that term anymore. Why have all of a sudden in the last 4 or 5 years, has the population been, I use the term brainwashed coming from an economist, the CPI used to be last month, it's 0.5%. Wow, times 12, that sure looks like 6% to me. I mean, or you might be nice and say the last two months average, you know, they're 0.4 a piece. Well, then you're going to multiply that by 6, right? I mean, if it's, but you're going to get some sort of a, you know, if it's up 1% in the last 2 months, you multiply that by 6, not 12, correct? How do we get this thing where we're talking about this year over year? Who gives a crap what it was last January? I mean, why does that number even entertain itself here?
That's the number that is used in an awful lot of union contracts.
Well, since when?
I mean, when I negotiated the teachers' union contract, when I was on the board, that's the number that we use.
You use the yearly?
Yeah.
Okay. When I
we use the year over year. That's exactly what we use.
Okay. Now when I.
It was the year over year in December dictated the following year's raises as long as it wasn't over 5%.
Okay, I'm not saying that's wrong.
And that's, you know, I was on that board. Well, when did I have to pull my kids out of public school because the teachers were so cruel to my kids because I was on the board? Third grade. So, you know, about 20 years ago. That's just about every teacher's contract. Their raises are tied to CPI or CPI plus.
Okay. What year are you talking about?
Oh gosh, about 15 years ago.
Okay, and when I did this, it was 1979, mm-hmm. and we either, so I'm going back a ways. We either used the quarterly number or the monthly number. We didn't wait for the year.
We used the annual number. It was the annual, the you know, cost of living adjustment to their, you know, to their salaries was like, 3% or CPI, whichever was greater or something stupid like that.
Well, in 79, it was going up.
There was one year that we had a spike in December CPI and it wrecked our budget.
Well, I'm going to say in 79, now mm-hmm. I do remember, we used the monthly. And because it was going up so fast, if it was 1% that month, I called my buddy, my guy at MBTA, Massachusetts Bay Transportation Authority, and I'd say, it looks to me like it's 1%. Our contract that was 60 mil is now 60,006,000. He goes, I got the same number. Looks good on this end. That was it. We did it monthly.
Well, that was a different inflation environment too.
Well, but right now, if we start going up 1% a month. What do I care what it was last January? I mean, I understand it's in the contract, but what do I care?
Yeah, I mean, people utilize that number. That number is utilized. I don't know because I'm not quite there yet, but I think the Social Security numbers figure into that as well.
Don't get me started.
I know, but I'm just telling you that that's why we get an annual number.
I have a guy who finds me at the Tripoli, and he's on Social Security. And he knows I do the show. He listens, and whatever happens in Social Security, he tells me about. Right?
Oh, I'm sure.
So, I still can't get over 2 years in a row. This year, worse. That our government, and I'm not saying Dems would have been any different. Our government, the thing that is so misleading and is such a bunch of lying pack of crap. But the thing that, as I get older, I get grumpier about, Russell.
Their
view of how stupid we are is insulting. it's freaking insulting. Yeah. The guy shows me the letter, and last year, it was off the top of my head. I know the Social Security increase was 2.3%, which is pretty much roughly what you're talking about, right? But if you know anybody who's on Social Security or you're on it, if you have Medicare Part B. Part A is, quote, included, the hospital. So if you pay that your whole life, that's included. Part B is the doctor. You have to pay for that. And I think, I could get the number here, but essentially the increase in that number. So if your Social Security is 2,800, they're going to take that right off the check. They're not going to send you to 2,800 and send you a bill. They take it right off your Social Security, Medicare Part B. So they send out a letter and they tell people the CPI for you is 2.3%, but for us, I think it was it 6 or 7.5 or 8, something like that. The Part B went up. So they essentially sending us out, all these old people going, hey, you dumb bleeps, we're going to count the CPI that we're paying you at 2.3, but by the way, the one you're paying us is up 7. I mean, they send us out in the same letter. I mean, how they don't have 90 million old people with water balloons going to the White House and the Congress, I have no idea, but they don't. They get away with it. How can you send out that letter? Here's my CPI, here's yours. So get a load of this. This guy, you don't know this, but maybe you do. If you do, it's because somebody told you. If you decide when you're 65 to say not sign up for the prescription drug, which is Part D, you have to, and say you don't sign up to your 68 the first time you have to get a prescription. You know, first, you know, you're bulletproof. I don't need any prescriptions. Screw that. Then all of a sudden, you got a couple of prescriptions, so you hurry up and sign up, right? Well, and I don't really have a problem with this. The government says, okay, since you didn't sign up for the 3 years you didn't need them, which is what insurance is all about, right? I mean, you don't wait until you're sick and then you sign up for the insurance. I mean, that's not the way it ought to be. So you have to pay a penalty, like, for the rest of your life. And depending on how long
you pay into it initially?
Yeah. So they're going to say, okay, Medicare Part D is $35 a month. But you, Russell, since you tried to screw us the first 3 years, we're going to charge you $10 a month extra now for, like, forever until you croak. I don't really have a problem with that, right? So so this guy's paying $10. Well, 2 weeks ago, I head down to the local emporium, and a guy shows me this letter. Do you believe this shit? Basically, they increased the price of the penalty from $10 to $13 a month. The guy's now, he's 70, so he's been paying this penalty for 5 years. how do you increase the price of the penalty by 30%? It's only $3, but it's, you know, it's a real number. It's how do you do that?
That sounds like changing the laws retroactively.
Yeah, I mean, how do you do that? It's like, okay, Russell,
I'm gonna make it illegal to have a morning show about both sports and business.
Yeah,
and I'm gonna fine you $100,000 for it.
You go in and you get a $200 fine for speed. Then you go, I can't pay it. And the guy goes, okay, pay $100 now and $100 in 6 months. And all of a sudden, you get a letter in the mail 6 months. Well, the $100 went up to $130. You know, where did that come from? My fine was $100. How did it get to $130? It's insane.
Well, convenience fee.
Yeah, convenience fee. God. So. I mean, I'm looking at this. I can't believe that somebody had the balls to send this letter out to people. Not to mention, they had them up for the other $3. I mean, what do they think of us? Can we really be that stupid collectively? Maybe we are.
It's either are they that stupid or what the hell can they do?
Well, there's a,
you know.
Do you guys ever, we had a class at the University of Chicago, and I don't know why they did this, but, well, because you had to take 20 classes. And there's only so many business classes you could sit there through. I was lucky enough to be at campus, which meant I could take about 8 or 9 classes in the economics school, right? Which is totally different than the business school. That's where I had history of economic thought stuff. That's where I had Stigler. That's where I had Milton Friedman, those guys. I could never have taken them if I just was in the business school or was going downtown. But I'd have, you know, on my fifth accounting class, I'd have been going squirrely. I mean, you're learning the same stuff, right? Anyway, so one of the classes they kind of recommended people take, it had to do with all kinds of stuff. It was designing compensation plans, designing, how do you figure out if a hospital is doing a good job or not? How could you do a regression analysis on hospital care when it's so subjective? All kinds of stuff that made people think. And one of them, the guy only took like a week or two, but I remember like it was yesterday. The guy was talking about being able to nick people in such a way where it pisses them off, but it doesn't, you know, drive them to the point where they're going to do something about it. You know, like if you're walking to work. And somebody hits you with a spitball or something, you know, in the back, and you're wearing a coat, you don't even kind of notice it. You're kind of pissed off that somebody's nailing you with a spitball, but probably you're not going to camp out there with a police baton and beat the crap out of the guy before the spitball. And how you can nick people a little bit and it pisses them off, but not enough for them to do anything about it. I mean, nobody's going to grab a sandwich sign and go back and forth in front of the Social Security place for his $3. And the weird part is people count on that. And when you do it, you have to be real careful. You don't get to the point where all of a sudden everybody's so pissed off that now you actually hear about it. So you want to keep doing this by dribs and drabs. And seemingly like government's better at it than companies.
You want to keep people at a low boil.
Yeah. Well, you just say, okay, it's something. I mean, you know, and you're by having homes and so forth, that if they raise your taxes some number, you're going to be pissed off. You're going to tell people at the bar or the coffee shop, or if you're driving down to Indiana, you're going to bitch about it to the people in the car with you. But if they tripled them to where everybody had a cell, you probably would get the sandwich sign out and you'd be up there pounding on the people's cars at the. They have to make sure they don't reach that level. You know what I mean?
You think that's what government's doing? They're keeping us at a low boil.
Yeah. Well, they're doing whatever they can to us, hoping that it doesn't get there. But I'll tell you what,
a warm boil or a hot boil.
But I listen to people. I never used to. I mean, I guess I maybe did as much as anybody else. But when you're young, you don't listen to anybody, right? Just yourself.
Oh, your friend. You know everything.
Yeah, you know everything. So I'm sitting there yesterday. We get my truck aligned, right? And all of a sudden, three. Old ladies sit down next to me. I mean, they got to be in their 80s. Two black ladies, one white lady. And all of a sudden, I'm watching this show, and they start talking about how much Trump is spending every day on this war. You know, it's $2 billion a day or one, whatever. Who knows what the estimates are? Every one of them. You just swore I jammed them with three cups of espresso. Do you have any idea how much my prescription drugs went up last month? And this guy's spending $2 billion a day blowing people up we don't even care about. I mean it's right there. It's under the skin for an awful lot of people. I would never have guessed. I would have thought these ladies would be pulling out a crochet needle and start crocheting. They're watching the TV, and the minute they hit the $2 billion a day, they're going, one lady says to me, do you have any idea how much my prescription went up last month? I'm sitting right next to her. I go, no, tell me. I do a podcast. I want to know. And I actually listen. She goes, yeah, it's up some percent this year. And all this guy talks about is lowered prescription drugs. All they're doing is going up, and he's spending all this money blowing somebody up in the Middle East we don't even care about. I mean, amazing. And this lady had me 85. I mean, there's a lot of stuff percolating. I'm not just saying it's all about this particular administration, because obviously this all went up under the Democrats too. But I mean, I don't think our people have any kind of an idea. They know that there's nothing to fear from this lady. That part they know. She may vote. She may, but she sure as hell not going to get a water cannon and go after the Senate. But they know she's harmless. It doesn't mean she doesn't care, and she doesn't recognize what's happening to her. You know what I'm saying? That I think a lot of that's happening in this country. I mean, why do you think Trump was able to get people to follow him, what he's doing? People are pissed off. I mean, I don't think that's the solution, but I understand why he was effective, don't you?
Yeah, no, I get how he was able to tap into a certain something and get a lot of people to vote for him, but believing that he was going to help them out.
But serious, not that this isn't all serious, but I'm leading up to something here. Is whether, it's not getting a whole thing about tariffs and everything, but the fact is it was a serious tax plan that somehow now is blown up somehow. And I'm on record, even though people think I'm just flaming liberals, I'm not. I think they should not go through the machinations of paying it back. I think that's way too much trouble. It's never going to get to the people who actually paid it. Just let the sleeping dog lie and go onward from here. But now that's one man's opinion, and I'd sure like to have yours, because I don't really need Walmart getting a big chunk of money back that I never see, so what's the point? But what I'm saying is we now are talking about Secretary of the Treasury wanting to get $1.7 trillion more in the next, 90 days or something. We're blowing through $1 trillion every 44 days, Russell. This is now we have to do one of three things. We got to borrow it, we got to print it, or we got to tax it. I don't think these guys are going to tax it. I don't know that people who we're not. It's not like 100% of our debt is in this country. 45-50% is out of the country. Where do you think this goes? I, I lobbed this out.
They're going to have to print more because you're seeing cracks in the bond market. You're really seeing some cracks in the bond market that are kind of worrisome to me. I'm surprised CPI didn't come in really hot because of the way that the bond market had been acting. I think that was actually anticipating that that might happen.
Well, the unadjusted number's hot at 0.5.
Yeah. But, the stock market didn't really react to it.
Well, suppose they're down 19. You're right. But
I didn't have a trade on or anything like that, but I kind of felt like I feel like inflation's going to end up being our next headline thing. Not based on February, but goodness gracious, I can't even imagine how much work they're going to have to do to make the March number palatable in a month.
What, you know, we have I admit to being a little bit older than a lot of the very smart people on the show, and again, things that happen in your lifetime. I mean, I can tell. This is not good or bad. That you, well, what happened to you on the school board, having taken your kids out, is, I'll use the term, a scar. You're never going to forget it, nor should you.
No.
Nor should you. And yet, I've talked to, you know, Carol. Maybe will believe what I'm saying, but even Hal yesterday, you know, and he's, you know, I was there. I had a bridge loan at 8.5% that 6 months later was 14. Or 8 months later, I've seen it. I've got the scar to prove it. Now I mentioned to several people. Now I said, you know, if it turns out that, and I'm not saying that, you know, this, because of the numbers, we now have to grab from people in the borrowing side, assuming we don't print at all. Say we print half and do the other. Both are going to cause somewhat of a problem. The printing it is going to cause people's expectations of inflation to go higher, which means your long-term rates. I'm not going to lend you money for 10 years at 4% if I think the inflation is going to be 6. That's a losing deal for me, right? So that's on one hand. Plus, we might have a president, I don't want to get into the politics of it, but essentially loves to insult people that loan us money, which I never, at a guttural Southside level, I try not to insult people that loan me money. But he doesn't seem to have any problem with that. But let's say somebody, Britain or somebody, decides, well, you know, I don't like this guy. We're $900 billion in hock to these people. How about we cut back $30 billion on the next auction? Even if that doesn't happen, I could see a 10-year rate here a year from now being, instead, because it's up from 3.9 to 4.13 in like the last week. If that goes, if that goes to 8%, I'm not even talking about 12 or 15. If that goes to 8%. Where does that put the stock market? Where does that put the housing market? I think it puts the stock market down 40% and houses down 30%. I don't want to go there, Russell. But when I talk to someone,
I'd have a hard time. I don't think we would get to 8%. I could easily see us in like the 6-7% range, and stocks down 20-25%. Really could.
Well, I mean,
I actually think it would be more detrimental to the housing market. Much more detrimental to the housing market. It's we're already starting to see a little bit of a softening, and it's not going to take a whole lot to make it to make it much worse.
But why? I mean,
we had the pick of the litter when we just went through the process of selling one house and buying two.
Yeah, well, I mean, good for you.
We traded one house for another, and then we bought a house. And the house that we bought, we basically were negotiating on three almost very similar houses at the same time.
Yeah, you're like doing an option spread. You're trading one for the other.
Yeah. No, actually, it was a one-for-two asset swap and a credit.
Okay.
We traded one house for another, got some cash, and used some of that cash to buy a second house. And now we're finding ways to spend the leftover money on, you know, stuff we need.
A new bass boat? A bass boat, a yacht?
What?
You need a yacht or a bass boat or something?
No. Like, you know, new AC and heating.
Oh, yeah. Well, you need that.
Yeah, all those kind of things.
Hey, I got a quick question. Now, you're obviously, you teach every day and you write books. So you know what the hell I'm talking about. This is a very simple calculation that somehow for the last 25 years has gotten to be one that people forget. But I don't forget it because, like I said, I grew up in those times. See, I look at the 0.5 unadjusted number last month, that doesn't even include the big part of the energy. First of all, we adjusted half of it out this month, and a big hit's not going to be until next month. And it probably won't stay there. I'm going to say, thinking the Middle East winds down and oil goes back to where it was. Let's say that's the hope. But if we're talking about 0.5 per month, okay, let's say we don't... what if? Just roll with me for a second. Times 12 is 6. The real rate of interest historically is 2 to 3.
Yeah, let's, and you want to add that on top of it. So that gives you 8.
That gives you 8. So how come when I lob the 8 number out there, everybody recoils in horror and says we're not going to get there? We're there. You could almost say we're there. Close. I mean, hopefully we don't stay there, but as of this month, we're there, right?
Well,
sort of.
Kind of.
But I'm saying, am I the only person who looks at that number and kind of gets horrified, like, if this keeps up for a while, that's where we're going, like, really quick. And everybody, for some reason, people...
I don't think it'd take a whole lot for us to get there. I really don't. I mean, you're citing the unadjusted number, but March is got the number next month's going to be pretty brutal.
Yeah.
And I'm really glad that it's not my job to try and estimate what it's going to be. I assume... Yeah, you know, the Fed's got their next meeting next Wednesday. My assumption is that we're going to hear a little bit more about inflation than we've heard in the past.
Well, how many people?
And, and if you really want to get petty and stuff about it, this just popped in my mind. You know, Powell's probably not really a big fan of Trump right now. I mean, I feel like Powell has maintained 100% professionalism in the face of people not being professional toward him.
Yep.
I really do. I mean, you got to have a ton of respect for that guy. A lesser man, and I would say that I would do this. I wouldn't mind a big F you on the way out to the administration in one of the statements. But I do think that that they're going to have to address potential inflation in the next statement at minimum. We have gone from the next cut not coming until as late as September now, based on the derivative markets.
But again, I'll go back to the word I should
no,
never
they won't get that.
But I'll go back to the word I should never even use the term brainwash. But people have gotten used to the fact. I talk to somebody. So, you know, what if all of a sudden we go the other way and inflation really is 5 or 6%? And right now it's got to be, even anybody's going to say it's 3. It's not 2. I mean, for God's sake.
Yeah.
So, but even if you add 3 to 3, you're up to 6 long term, right? So even if you even, so, but everybody, if I were to say, you know, they might be pushing a spot where they're going to go up 1% per month. Mm-hmm. They look at me like did he just fart in church? I mean, I've seen it happen. So when somebody
it has happened. It could possibly, you know, we're 10 days into March.
Yeah.
And, you know, if this thing escalates and you know, we get something catastrophic that truly, truly does shut the Strait of Hormuz, it, you know, doesn't make it very dangerous, but truly cuts it off, that could be a massive problem. And Because energy just bleeds through to everything else. The stuff you get at the grocery store, there is an energy component to it because it had to get to the grocery store. It will, and if we stick at current levels for the whole month, you're going to see a catastrophic March CPI number come out in early April.
Russell, just when you wander about daily, I'm not saying you hang around in bars, I know you don't, but just, you know, going into like the food store or going into the this stuff is, I mean, eggs were up to $4 a dozen, right? Mm-hmm. Since I buy for the office, right? Because after the show, it relaxes me to cook for everybody, and there's no place around here even to go to breakfast. There's a lot of stuff that even open up past COVID. But last 2 weeks ago, I went to the Restaurant Depot, which I can get in because I know I got guys, right? Mm-hmm. I buy 12 dozen jumbo eggs. Guess how much?
That would take 12 dozen.
Yeah.
All right. We went from cart. 12 dozen, 12 cents. 108.
$19.
12 dozen?
Yep. 1960.
You should be standing out at an underpass reselling them.
Well, okay, but what I'm saying is, well, no, they're
oranges.
They're $1.89 at Meijer's, a dozen on a Sunday.
Oh, okay.
But I'm saying, now Audrey and I went to the local place for in the omelets are $15. They have not come down a stitch. In fact, they're up a buck.
They haven't.
From when eggs were up $4. And
of course they haven't.
Yeah, you know, and the place downstairs, the bar, they have all these company parties down there. Why? It's kind of a dive bar, but we get on there because we know the people. But
it's local.
It's well, yeah. It's in
everybody
the,
can find it.
It's in the building, so if you can't find it, you're bad shape.
I know where you're talking
about. Yeah. So, but now they just raised the price of. When these young people come with these companies for the company party, usually there might be some. The place will buy beer and wine, and maybe they'll buy a bunch of pizzas or something. I mean, you know, these are not big time parties, or they're going somewhere else after they meet here before. Well, all these kids love shots, right? I was never a shot guy. I mean, I never have another shot. I have one a year maybe, and that's if it's forced on me. But it's never really forced on you, but because you do it yourself. But they just upped the price of their Jameson shots to $10. Right, so if you get a tray of 25 shots for your place, it's $250. Well, at Meyer's on Sunday, they got a special on JMO. It's $45 for a liter and a half. And I'm going to say, I don't know how many ounces are in a liter and a half. I'm going to say there's 40 shots
there
in there.
Shots in there.
There's got to be 40 shots in there. So yeah. your margin is what is that? 1,000%? I mean, how far do you have to go on this? I mean, how much more can you get out of three eggs and an omelet, for God's sake, when other than $17-18? I mean, where are we going? I mean, and by the way, eggs drop by half and the omelet goes up another buck. I mean, what is it strictly money? I'll tell you that Milton Friedman, one day the course I took was the theory of price, and he hated teaching it. The book sucked. It was a manuscript. It was his own manuscript. He hated it so much he never even finished it. So it was kind of a loosely bound thing that you bought. And he always
I have a copy of that.
It's unbelievable, and it's blue.
Yeah.
It's blue. Anyway, there's nothing but charts in there and calculus. So who the hell wants to read it? But so you can always drive him off topic. And somebody said, Dr. Friedman, what is hardest thing to know about in economics? He goes, hardest concept to grasp is in the short term, cost has nothing to do with price. And people looked at him like, what are you talking about? And he goes, in the long term, yeah. Short term, not so much.
Mm-hmm.
He goes, now, right now, if you can get $18 for an omelet, it doesn't matter whether the eggs are 40 cents on the plate or 80 cents. Mm-hmm. One has nothing to do with the other. Now, if eggs stay there and somebody can get a good lease someplace, maybe somebody will lob an $11 omelet at you, but it's not going to be $5.
You know, no.
I mean, somewhere along the line, this stuff doesn't come down. I mean, what's going to cause prescription drugs to come down? We've had two presidents in a row that have done nothing but diarrhea of the mouth about lowering. Not one of the ones that Biden talked about, the 10 he had out there. I think Trump might have made some progress on the new fatso drug, but none of the other stuff that people have to take. No blood thinners, no anything. No chemotherapy. Went from $50,000 down to $5,000, which is what it costs in, you know, another country. None of that has done anything. So, I mean, talk about totally ineffectual. That industry is kind of on its own. They do whatever they want, aren't they?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The cost of higher education hasn't gone up that much, though, in the last 5 years, has it?
Not as bad as it had been.
What do you guys, when I say you guys, is Northwestern pushing $20,000 on room and board now?
I don't know, but I'm sure it's pretty bad.
What do those guys eat? Steaks every night or what?
I don't know. You know, they've got so many students from outside the U.S. That's just probably a major cash cow for them.
Well, hey, the daughter doesn't want to come on the air. I would love to have had her on today talking about that. What that guy was talking about.
She would have had a field day with us. She's probably sleeping in now because really she was up late. She was texting us.
God, it was so interesting. Do you know what the guy was talking about? The something where instead of just having a circle, the thing had a hook. And what does that mean?
It just means that the rotation is so fast that it's kind of blowing some stuff off there.
Wow. Anyway,
they normally look like circles, but when they have those tails, I think they're a bit more powerful. And I assume he's talking about the one that hit Kankakee and kind of went across northern Indiana a bit.
Well, it hadn't hit anything yet. It was just warming up, and he goes, "Oh man, look at this thing. This is going to be bad."
Yeah. Well, that's. I mean, she skipped something last night. It wasn't terribly important, but she skipped something last night to stay in and watch all of the weather stuff.
Well,
and that's how, and she's still into it.
We'll tell her this when she wakes up. Tell her we talked about her the whole show.
Yeah, we talked about you the whole show, Emmy. So.
Anyway, Russell, thank you. Have a good week, buddy. Are you guys on break, or what are you doing?
On break next week. But like I said, Maggie's on break this week, and she's wandering Japan at the moment. I'll send you a picture.
Good for a boy.
That's a monkey is.
Man, I would never want to fly that far. Anyway, good luck to her. Good luck to you, and have a nice week. SP Futures, these numbers have done nothing. Down 5, NASDAQ Futures up 5, so we're about as close to flat as we can get here. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.